Happy New Year, everyone. This is Chris Spear, and you're listening to Chefs Without Restaurants, the show where I speak with culinary entrepreneurs and people working in the food and beverage industry outside of a traditional restaurant setting. I have 31 years of working in kitchens, but not restaurants, and currently operate a personal chef business throwing dinner parties in the Washington, D.C. area. You might have noticed that I took a couple weeks off for the holidays. I hope yours were fantastic. Mine certainly were. Though, the COVID did hit me the week of Christmas, so that's some of what impacted my decision not to release some episodes. But I'm back, and this episode's a little different. You might have heard my episode a few weeks ago with Tony Moore from the Winning at Work podcast. I got some really great feedback on our conversation, and I wanted to share the other side of it. I had mentioned that I was on Tony's podcast, which came out a few months ago. So I asked Tony if I could share some of that episode here. I cut out the beginning of it because a lot of it's my origin story. If you've listened to this podcast for a little bit, or even if you haven't, you probably have some idea of how and why I started my personal chef business. So I wanted to get right to the heart of the episode. Because Tony works in the CPG, that's consumer packaged goods, space, some of our conversation centers around that. I talk about my favorite processed foods, you know, the brands that I'm loyal to, even though they are not all natural. We also talk about vegetarian goods, specifically processed proteins like Beyond Meat. We discuss other topics like the nostalgia of food and the importance of reading a room when you work as a personal chef. Meaning, every party's different, and I talk about how I try to adapt based on the vibe. You know, are these people who want to hear the spiel about where the food comes from, or is it a drop the plate and run kind of dinner? I think there are some gems in this episode, and I hope you get a lot out of it. I'm going to be continuing to drop both solo episodes and guest episodes for you this year. If you have any feedback, you can reach out to me on Instagram and Threads at Chefs Without Restaurants, or shoot me an email at chefswithoutrestaurants@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great week. Are you a personal chef looking for support and growth opportunities? Look no further than the United States Personal Chef Association. With 1,000 members across the U.S. and Canada, USPCA provides liability insurance, certification, lead generation, and more. Consumers can trust that their meal experience is insured and supported by USPCA. Apply now for USPCA membership and save $75 on premier, provisional, preparatory, and corporate memberships, as well as $25 on student memberships by using code HAPPYNEWYEAR24 at uspca.com/join. Plus, Hire Chef subscriptions are available to list your personal chef business at hirechef.com. To learn more about membership, advertising, or partnership opportunities, call Angela at 1-800-995-2138, extension 705, or email aprather@uspca.com. It's now or never, and that was 7 years ago, just about now. November 6th, 2016 was my last day of work at the job I'd been at for 10 years.
So you freed yourself 7 years ago.
Freed myself in some ways, shackled myself in other ways. But well, yes, I mean, no, leave it. Yes, I left the job, yeah, in 2016 to go out and do this personal chef thing on my own full time.
So I was thinking, okay, if I wanted a personal chef to come in and cook, the first, I guess there's a number of thoughts that come to me. First of all, you know, who is this person that I'm, you know, letting into my house? What do they specialize in? You know, are they going to cook what I want? You know, just kind of what that dynamic was. And I was thinking, you know, that's probably kind of a hard business to advertise. I would feel like that's a kind of that classic kind of word of mouth. What have you found is really, really works for chefs in this space?
Word of mouth is obviously huge. Reviews are huge.
Oh,
and
reviews,
you talked, yes, about branding, right? That's what it is. Before Perfect Little Bites was a personal chef business, it was a blog. It was a food blog. And for a number of years, people referred to me as a blogger, and I kind of hated that. I saw it as like a pejorative term. Like, no, I'm a chef. I'm just using it because it was so new. I mean, I started the blog Perfect Little Bites in 2010. And I wanted it to be, you know, content. Now we talk about content marketing and all that stuff, but that's what I was doing. Because I do customized dinners and they're all personalized, I wanted people to kind of be able to pull the curtain back and see what I was doing. And this is my thought process. And this is kind of what I like. And it's not for everyone. It was almost to exclude a certain population. As, you know, I like to dog on the Cheesecake Factory and the Olive Garden, but like if that's your culinary preferences, I am not for you. So maybe having me have a whole roasted pig's head on a table is going to have some people opt out. But reviews are huge, right?
Did you do that?
So I have done some of those head-to-tail dinners. And for a while, one of my – actually, before I revealed myself, because I was working a job and was afraid people – like my bosses were going to find out that I was moonlighting or whatever. My avatar was me holding a raw pig's head in front of my face. And then I was kind of like, why am I not getting more calls for dinners, you know? But I was afraid to put my face on the internet. Yeah, maybe it's a turnoff. And it actually didn't stop people from hiring me. And then you got to the point where it was just like, I'm going to do my thing and it is what it is, you know? But yeah, it all comes down to branding and positioning. Like, where are you in the market? I wanted to be high end. I wanted, you know, my dinners have always started at a minimum of $100 a head when there's people out there doing $30 dinners. For me, I always wanted to bring linen napkins, bring my own china, have it be an experience. You know, instead of going out for your wife's birthday, have me come in, do that. So just I, from a very early on in this, you know, I listened to a lot of business, big Gary Vee fan, you know, listening to those people and talking about, you know, what makes you stand out and how do you convey your story to people? So for me, the storytelling was in place long before I even started cooking for people.
You know, Chris, it just hit me that what you're doing really does play to the Instagrammableness of today's society and content. I'm going to tell you, there is no way a chef comes over and puts a beautiful meal on the table and there's not an accompaniment of great photos that are plastered all over that person's Facebook or Insta, whatever it is, like hashtag home chef. I would think that in and of itself would just create so much buzz from everybody. Like, hey, where did you do this? How'd you find him? And da 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 da.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things is with like business social media pages, they say keep them for business. You know, you should have your personal and your business separate. But for me, it was important to have some elements of my home life because I think this is so personal. You're inviting me into your home. Isn't it great to see me out in the pumpkin patch with my kids? You know, I'm a family man. You know, because
you're not some monster who puts
cultivate this relationship with my customers, and I almost want them to feel like they know me and vice versa by the time I get into your house. I've always wanted my business to be less transactional and more personal. And that's something I've guests on my podcast, I have friends, we don't always agree with it. It's like taking deposits. Not that there's anything wrong with money, but I feel once it becomes like you start talking about money too much and it becomes transactional, it's just very much like you're the customer, I'm the person providing a service. And I grew up in a day and age where my dad said, you know, your word and your handshake was the deal and that's all it was. And I've never been screwed. If I say, I'm going to come cook dinner for you on Friday and it's $300 and you say, okay, then that's good for me. And then, you know, the money thing will work itself out. No one's ever not paid me or something. And I have people say, that's crazy. But I just feel like it changes the relationship with the customer.
Yeah, I could imagine that kind of cheapens or kind of just takes away from the experience, you know, to be going through some kind of a Venmo transaction before you come out. Yeah, I don't know.
And the same with contracts. You know, a lot of people have these contracts of, I will do this, you will do that, I will do this, you will do that. You sign this, you send it to me by this day. Like, that's fine. I guess it's a CYA in some, you know, instances. But again, I've never had a problem with that. So I don't do contracts. I don't do invoices. I've been doing this for like 11 years and I've never been burned or had a problem. So
no invoices.
No, it's just, it's an email. Hey, Tony, right. I'm coming to your house. You know, I'm cooking for you and your wife. It's going to be $200. Here's how I take, you can pay me in cash, credit. Here's my Venmo. Here's my Zelle. You can pay me day of. And that's
and
it.
If it's I've working, sent you an email. Working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some businesses are a lot more complex. Of course, they require that. I would imagine workers' comp, liability, all those things could get in the way. But if you do have a good relationship with people, they're not looking to stick it to you either.
Yeah. And I'm a solo person. I don't have employees. I don't report to anyone. You know, it's very easy in that. It would be different maybe if I had people who cooked under my name. You know, if I'm sending you out to someone's house and then, you know, I pay you, and like, then there could be other things that happen. But right now it's just me, and it allows me to be nimble and just get things done and do it the way that I want to get it done.
Chris, what kind of food do you just love cooking? Or are you just so versatile, it's like whatever the palates are, you can kind of adjust. Like, what's your go-to?
Yeah, I'm really, go-to is tacos. I love tacos. I love Mexican. I love authentic Mexican. I love Tex-Mex. Big proponent of making your own tortillas at home. I think everyone should learn how to make tortillas because it's two ingredients, and one of which is water. So it's so
easy. How do
easy.
You make them? That sounds delicious.
Masa and water. Yeah, you buy... masa harina, like a dry product. In a lot of grocery stores, there's a stuff called maseca, and I'm not going to get into like what that is and the quality. I use a brand called Macienda. I had the founder on my podcast. He put out a cookbook last year. He's sourcing high quality heirloom corn from Mexico. They're nixtamalizing it, grinding it, and you can either buy from them the corn and do it yourself, but he has a really great masa harina product, and they just got a deal where they're in all Whole Foods, which is huge for them because... You know, I started buying it like 5 years ago, and it was just they ship directly via mail. And now you can get their masa in Whole Foods, and it's a game changer. And you just mix masa and water and let it rest 5 minutes, roll it into a ball, and then, you know, press it out on a griddle, cast iron skillet, whatever. You know, you can get way more technical about it, but at its roots, it's just two ingredients, and one of those is water.
Yeah. And, you know, the Good For You movement is here to stay. Everyone wants, you know, healthier living. So it makes perfect sense for you when you're kind of positioning yourself as that kind of premium cook that you're going to be sourcing these wonderful meals. Do you ever, and I'm curious because obviously I'm not in your market, so I haven't had a chance to have a delicious meal. When you're presenting the food, you know, part of your presentation, are you also giving some of that backstory like that you just shared with me?
You have to read the room. And again, this is something I talk about with other personal chefs on my podcast. Different people hire you for different reasons. It might be a corporate dinner. It might be people who don't really care about food. The amount of times that I have served food and you bring it out and they're talking and you can't even tell them what it is. Ideally, I want to drop the plate. They see that I'm there. They stop talking. Maybe the host says, hold on one second. Chris is here. And then I get to talk. Other times they don't. You come out and you bring the plates and there's 15 people and it's loud and you're putting food down and you can tell that nobody really cares. And at those parties, quite often you clear the plates and you've got, you know, this 12-ounce ribeye steak and there's maybe 8 ounces left on the plate and you're just scraping it into the bin. Like the food is just an accessory for something else going on. Yeah, it's crazy. So you get a good feel. I mean, I can usually tell even before I go to a party based on phone calls and emails what the vibe is going to be. And then once you get there, you can tell really quickly if you're going to be the centerpiece of the dinner or just the help. And when you're just the help, quite often they don't really want to hear that story. But if they do, yes, there's more extended time. A dinner I did this past Saturday, I was in the dining room during the entree course for almost the whole thing. You know, we were just talking. And while they were eating, I was out there for 20 minutes, which is on the long end for me to just keep talking about food and cooking. But they kept asking questions and they were really interested. But that's not every party, and you know, I'm okay with that, but I want to give you as much info as I can if you want that.
So you don't have like a one pager that you might print up that might, you know, talk about, okay, because I've experienced some catering from certain groups where there's something unique, you know, and they'll kind of bring that out and place it so you can kind of see. I was just curious because that's kind of
I love that. But, you know, everyone jokes on the internet about like every time you go to a restaurant now, it's like there's the story and the spiel. And if you dined with us before and, you know, explaining this is meant to be, it's like just get on with it and bring me the food, right? Like that's kind of the big joke about dining in restaurants these days, you know?
Yeah, you know, you do get a little jaded to the, you know, it's a little over the top. It's a little too, they're trying too hard. But I think, yeah, so to your point, you know, reading the room and knowing who you're talking to. I guess when you go out and you lay it down and you set the plate, you know, if people are making eye contact with you, that's your first sign that they see you and that they recognize you. Okay, so Mexican is one of your favorites, you know, kind of authentic Mexican. What are some of your other fun?
Like Southern stuff, shrimp and grits, pimento cheese, you know, catfish, that kind of stuff.
Catfish. Which is interesting.
Yeah. And I'm not from here. I'm from New England originally. So these are things that I've kind of found a love for here. You know, I think it was important for me to, you know, I moved to Maryland to start kind of looking at what are mid-Atlantic foods, you know, what are kind of Southern foods, what do people around here like? And then if I could bring my own influences. So sometimes it's traditional, take shrimp and grits. You know, I think a lot of people know what that is, but I also love foods from Spain. So sometimes it's going to be a Spanish inspired shrimp and grits. So there's maybe Manchego cheese in the grits and do a tomato component, but have it based on like a Spanish brava sauce. And there's smoked paprika and sherry vinegar in there. And instead of doing a bacon or an andouille, doing like a Spanish Serrano ham. So sometimes I'll keep it strictly traditional, or sometimes I'll bring in some other things that really excite me and make it, you know, a little different.
How difficult is it for you to go grocery shopping reading labels these days? Because there is so much crap out there in our food system. And here you are curating some of the best food for people. What kind of pressure does that put on you just in your own personal life? Is it, do you stress out over this, or can you just be kind of easygoing? And
yeah, I'm easygoing about that. I mean, if you're talking about anything that's like a prepackaged thing, I, for the most part, have my go-to brands and things I like. And, you know, I think once you find some of those things, and then there's things like, I love ketchup. I love Heinz ketchup. I will never buy a natural ketchup, a low sugar, a made with beets, any of that nonsense. Like, I don't care. It's a super processed product. Nobody in the world makes better ketchup than Heinz regular ketchup. End of story. I don't want in-house ketchup, but just things like that. And it's like, if that means I don't do all natural cooking or whatever, I'm okay with that.
That is so funny that you signaled out that you singled out ketchup, because we've talked quite a little bit about that, because the role of sugar as an extender, you know, lets them use, or anyone who's using, you know, processed, they can use less tomatoes and add that sugar. But I have to admit, I mean, you're not wrong. I want to, on the, the flavor, I'm talking just straight flavor profile, straight, you know, but of course you look at the labels, and I've had some wonderful samples sent to me, and I do use them, and they are so much more tomato-y and zesty, and I know you've tried them. But that's.
But I think
example.
a lot of what I think goes back into cooking and successful restaurants and things is nostalgia and reference points and stuff. And you know, it gets hard if my nostalgia is definitely going to be different than yours, but like what we grew up eating, right? But I think that's like a classic flavor. I think people know it, and when you try something, even if you don't know that this has, you know, if you make a barbecue sauce and it has Heinz ketchup in it, I think it's going to have a flavor that's reminiscent of something you had growing up, because that's what we all use. We weren't using a natural ketchup. And I just think there's some receptor, some kind of trigger that makes you feel hopefully comfortable when you have something like that. But obviously, you know, going forward, when I'm looking at new brands and things to bring in my home, yeah, I love small, you know, small batch, small companies, you know, companies that are doing things the right way. If you want to use the term artisanal, or, you know, less ingredients, sure. My wife's a registered dietitian. She used to be a chef, but she's a dietitian now and has a master's in public health. So, you know, we talk about food nutrition, food labels all the time. That's her full-time job. But we also have a lot of those products in our home that are, you know, processed condiments and things of that nature. And, you know, my kids want to eat Kraft macaroni and cheese. I've tried making homemade. I've tried like the Annie's, like, and they're okay.
Right.
But again, you know, and this is a much bigger conversation, you know, how these companies have engineered these products to be crave-worthy.
Yes.
Between the salt, the fat, all of that stuff, that is hard. I don't want to eat a lot of processed foods, and I don't want to be serving them, but there are some things that I just love.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that is truly what's happened. They've engineered the food, and as a result, they have engineered our taste buds and our palate. And you, if you're trying to go really against that, you're fighting against something that is so big and so powerful. The consumer has to want to do it. You can't force them into these behavior changes. And that's what I think a lot of companies are trying to do. They're trying to force these consumer behavior changes.
Yes.
I want to get your take on something.
Sure.
Do you ever cook with plant-based foods? How do you, what's your...
What does plant-based foods mean? Does it mean, are you talking vegetables and vegetarian? Or are you talking artificially like...
Meat.
I don't eat like Beyond Meat and stuff like that. I think it's gross and terrible. Okay, let me back up. I don't like the beef ones. I will eat like the artificial chicken. I actually like, and I'm a big fan of Aldi grocery stores. I don't know if you have Aldi.
We have Aldi in the South. Yes.
I really like their vegetarian chicken. Like I actually, like that's one of my things I keep in the freezer at all times is like their breaded chicken nuggets that's, you know, soy protein or whatever. And I love throwing those in the oven and making like a fried chicken sandwich with that. So I like that. I don't like the beef ones though. I think they're weird. They have an off taste, off flavor. I mean, at the end of the day, I think you're better off just eating true plant-based and vegetable. I mean, I guess some of that, they're calling it plant-based. I don't think it's necessarily healthier. Like if you look at
a lot
of those meats.
I don't think some of them are.
You know, water, soybean oil, all these things. Going back to Aldi, they have a line of veggie burgers. And if you look at them, you know what every ingredient is there. They have a quinoa crunch burger and it has quinoa and it has red pepper and it has peas and it has corn. And,
that's the way
you know,
to do it.
Potato starch. You know,
see, that's the way to do it.
I make one at home that has walnuts and quinoa and chickpeas and things of that nature. So I'm a big fan of vegetarian cooking. I used to be a vegetarian. I think vegan food is really interesting right now. There's some cool stuff. I just, if I'm going to do it, I want to be healthier. And I think like, again, an overly processed product that maybe doesn't even have like actual vegetables in it isn't a better product for you.
I've seen some interesting developments where they take beef and they blend it with chicken. This is not a new idea, but that is, you know, lessening the dependence on just red meat and the consumption around red meat and what it might take to be producing enough red meat. They blend it with chicken and it comes out very, very similar. I just had someone on the podcast. It was Crossover Meats was the name of it. And they're frozen. And kind of to your point, it's great to just have something like that in the freezer. You can pop it out. You know, if you're out of whatever you wanted to cook, just pull them out and they're frozen and they're perfect. And there are some really good chicken brands out there that, or substitute chicken. There's some very, very good ones in that. I think chicken is further along, in my opinion, than beef.
I do too. You know, from a number of years of eating in vegetarian restaurants, like the TVP type stuff, I used to go to a Vietnamese restaurant, they called it like mock duck, but it was like vital wheat gluten, you know, that had this the right texture of it. And once you cooked it up in sauce, it was delicious. But like a hamburger, I would rather just eat a vegetable burger or even like one of the chicks ones.
Yes.
Before I have like a fake beef one. It's weird to me. And I still eat beef. So I would rather eat a hamburger, a good real hamburger less often, and then just have like, you know, an actual veggie patty the other times.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what I see happening here too a lot. So before we go, I want to know a little bit more about what some of your future plans are. Cause I know right now you kind of operate solo. Have you given thought to, or maybe what some of the pros and cons would be for you if you were to try to expand on your personal brand and maybe try to add more people to expand your reach? What's the future?
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. If I'm going to expand, it's going to be through Chefs Without Restaurants. You know, I'm building a network there. I'm building a community. Before it was a podcast, it was a community. It is. We have a Facebook group with like 1,500 members in it. It's something where I've looked at building an app for consumers to find personal chefs, or working as almost like a marketing agency. Since I taught myself how to do this, if you want to now start a personal chef business, can I build a course, or an ebook or something like that, and grow business that way? That's the scalable aspect. I got out of what I did partially because I didn't want to be a manager anymore. You know, I was at a level where I had 125 employees who reported to me. My daily success hinged on their success or failure, and you're getting calls at home because a 16-year-old did something stupid. And like, I didn't
show up to work.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't need that. I don't, you know, going back to like reviews, read any reviews of any business out there. And 90% of the negative ones come from some interaction that not the owner, not the chef, but a frontline employer. So I went to this restaurant and the waitress was rude. I went to this restaurant and, you know, the food was terrible. And, you know, it was a night the chef wasn't there. I don't want to send you to go cook at those people's house and you not, you know, holding things to my standard. Maybe I'm too much of a control freak. I totally am okay with that. But I have like a certain standard and certain level. And I'm doing what I do because I really enjoy it, the cooking process. If I start stepping back and become more of an office manager, that's not what I want to do. I could go make more money
if I'm going to sit behind a computer, I can make more money doing something in a more lucrative field than managing a bunch of cooks and chefs. I want to go out and cook because I enjoy going out and cooking. So if I'm going to grow and scale, it's going to be through the Chefs Without Restaurants community.
So Chris, for people that are maybe in your geographic area, like, what's the best way for them to connect with you and perhaps have you come down and, you know, bring a pig head?
Yeah.
Or maybe even better.
Yeah. Well, my business is called Perfect Little Bites. So perfectlittlebites.com, but I'm at Perfect Little Bites on social media, Facebook, Instagram there. You can find me there. You can DM me. You can follow along. I tell people, if you're not in my geographic area, I'm always sharing recipes, blogging about recipes, cooking about food, talking about food, giving cooking tips. So yeah, you know, follow along. Maybe you can learn some tips and tricks. Maybe you can pick up some recipes. I do about a 70-mile travel radius from Frederick, Maryland. So again, that's like DC, Northern Virginia, Baltimore, but I go into like Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. I go up to York, Lancaster, PA. For the right price, I travel. I know a lot of chefs who do travel things. I mean, I'm always amazed when someone says, yeah, this client paid for me to come down to Florida and cook for them for a week. You know, so if any of your listeners are out there and, you know, want to fly me out or have me commute out to wherever they are, I'm open to that as well.
Well, you know, weather dependent, that could be a pretty good gig, you know, flying down to Miami or, you know, kind of get out of the cold.
Yeah. Or take the, you know, I think that's one of the great things. And we didn't even talk about collaboration, but one of the things I love doing is cooking with other people. So it's like, oh, I've got a buddy up in Boston. Like, what if like I went up and hung out with him for a week and we did like one pop-up dinner? Like that would pay for the trip and I get to hang out and my family could come along and, you know, just take one day out of our trip and go do a dinner, you know, make a couple thousand dollars, and that would, you know, pay for the time up there.
That sounds fantastic. Chris, I'm so glad we had a chance to finally share this out on the platform, because you and I, you know, we've known each other for a while. We've been talking about this stuff offline. So it's so good that you're able to come down, expose Winning at Workers to, you know, what it's like kind of building that personal brand as a chef. And, you know, that strategy is certainly a good one with the collaboration and kind of building that community, right? To kind of get those reviews and let people see that, you know, there's a family man kind of behind the scenes, kind of take away the mystery of it all. Chris, so appreciate you coming down here today.
Well, thanks so much. I'm so glad we could do this. You're still here? The podcast's over. If you are indeed still here, thanks for taking the time to listen to the show. I'd love to direct you to one place, and that's chefswithoutrestaurants.org. From there, you'll be able to join our email newsletter, get connected in our free Facebook group, and join our personal chef, catering, and food truck database so I can help get you more job leads. And you'll also find a link to our sponsor page where you'll find products and services I love. You pay nothing additional to use these links, but I may get a small commission, which helps keep the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast and organization running. You might even get a discount for using some of these links. As always, you can reach out to me on Instagram at Chefs Without Restaurants or send me an email at chefswithoutrestaurants@gmail.com. Thanks so much.